Thank you, Steve. Wendy has the day off, and so Dane Neal is sitting in for Wendy. I'm Bill. I'm usually here. Alexander Zalbin joins us right now. He comes by every Friday, and we talk about the world of television. He is the managing editor of Decider.com. Hello, Alex. How are you?
I'm doing great. Happy Friday.
Good to talk to you. The last couple of weeks, as you've been on with us, I've been moaning and complaining about the fact that I'm not able to watch any CBS. There was a rift in the contract between CBS and my cable satellite provider. That has been cleared up. I don't know if you had anything to do with it, but if you did, thank you. I appreciate that.
No problem. I called every day, and finally they made it happen.
Good.
So you're welcome.
Your name means something.
Persistence pays off.
You got to be persistent. Absolutely.
I am the managing editor of Decider.com. You do this.
Put
right
it on.
Now.
Put I CBS guess. Back on. All right. So here's my question. What does this mean going forward? I know in the past, every once in a while, I'll be watching a show on satellite, and there'll be a crawl at the bottom of the line, bottom of the screen that says, they're up for renegotiation. Please call and let them know that you love this network and you don't want to lose it. CBS, I never expected this, but they were gone for more than 3 weeks. That's a long time. Mm-hmm. Is this going to keep happening now? Is every network's contract is up for renewal? Is that going to happen more and more, do you think?
Yeah, it's something that's happening more in a round, almost, with different networks as it goes in different places. As you mentioned, the contracts expire. And now that they have all these streaming services, now that CBS has CBS All Access, for example, as leverage, they can say to the cable providers, listen, we don't need you. We'll drive people here instead. They'll get the programming. They'll get it more efficiently. And that gives them that leverage they need to get the deal they want. So I think, you know, you're not going to see nonstop outages all over the place of every single channel quite yet,
yeah,
just because cable still is part of the atmosphere. But over the next year or two, tons more streaming services are being added. There's going to be a lot more focus there. And I would say 3-4 years down the road, we may be having a very different conversation about this.
You wonder if there, and we all remember, of course, the classic movie War Games, where they were able to kind of do all the scenarios and realize that it only works out
sure.
one way, and this is it. I mean, I remember a handful of years ago, or a few years ago, where WGN was disputed with Dish, and so for a long time, you couldn't get any of the programming. It was really frustrating, but in the end, it always works out. Isn't there a way that they can just kind of maybe run through the scenarios and decide that eventually this is going to work out, let's just avoid the whole thing? Or is there some kind of purpose to the whole denying people and see who squeaks the loudest, or to see if they can get Alexander to call in every day?
Oh yeah, right. What do you think?
That's the main goal, is to get me on the phone every day as much as possible. But it, you know, it's a very difficult and scary time for TV providers, whether you're coming from the network perspective or cable perspective or the streaming perspective. Nobody knows what's going to happen at this point, generally because there's so much TV on all three of those things. Viewers have become bifurcated across the board. You're seeing even the top shows on TV are not getting nearly half of what they used to get even 2 or 3 years ago. So everybody's sort of panicking at this point. We don't know how it's going to shake out or fall out. Certainly, streaming itself is relatively new. It's only about 5-ish years old at this point.
Yeah.
So it's not like that's the new normal. So I think right now everybody's waiting it out and thinking, okay, is this going to be permanent? Is everything actually moving over to streaming? Is cable dead? Or is streaming just a fad that's going to implode itself and everybody will come back to cable? And that's why you still have these back and forths, why you still have these fights, because A, the nervousness is playing in there, but also B, people still feel like they have enough push behind them to push other folks to do what they need to do.
A couple of years ago, several people made the suggestion of offering cable or satellite through an a la carte service, whereas if you normally get 200 channels, 300, 400 channels, you get to pick the 12 or 14 or 15 that you want and only pay for those. Has there been any progress in that, or is that just an idea that went away?
Yeah, there's a new thing, people call it skinny bundles, so it's just sort of getting individual channels, and there's a lot of different outlets. I believe Fubo is one, they're very focused on sports. Sling TV is another one of those, where you can kind of just pick and choose which channels you want versus, as you said, the 400 things.
Yeah.
The new thing that we're moving into, which adds another element in there, is streaming bundles that people are going to start talking about, essentially reinventing cable, but on streaming. And Disney came out with the first really big one the other day, where they said their new Disney Plus service, which is launching on November 12th, is going to bundle with Hulu, which Disney owns the majority stake in, and ESPN Plus, and I believe they're charging $12.99 a month for all three of those services, which, granted, is basically like getting ESPN Plus, which sports fans, as far as I've heard, are a little iffy on, for about $1 a month above the price of Hulu and Disney Plus. But at the same time, you're getting a lot of content, and that might be, frankly, all the content you need.
Right. True. True. All right. Story number one, and this one, I'm a little leery of this change, but I understand it. The last Academy Awards went hostless. There was nobody hosting for years and years and years. You'd find a top comedian hosting the Academy Awards. The Academy Awards said, no, we're not going to do it this year. There were some problems with Kevin Hart, so they went without a host. Now, the Emmys are going to do the exact same thing when they broadcast the Emmy Awards. What do you make of this, Alex?
Well, their company line, this is the first year that Fox is doing the Emmy Awards, or at least the first time in recent years that they're doing the Emmy Awards. And their company line is that so many big shows ended, they want to give them time to shine. You have Game of Thrones, you have Veep, you have Big Bang Theory, et cetera, et cetera. So they want to keep it focused on the shows versus the way that they said it was taking 12 to 15 minutes to focus on the host. It takes time away from TV. You'll still see bits, you'll still see performances and other things. You just won't have that opening monologue or anything like that.
So you like it this way, or you like it the old way? Which way is better?
I like a host.
I do too.
It keeps things moving. You know, Amy Poehler had actually a really good joke about it when she was asked, where she said, oh, I always love going to a house party and not knowing whose house it is. And I think that was pretty apt.
I will say the Academy Awards, the streamlined version that ran last year, was pretty fast and entertaining. But the thing I looked forward to the most was the host coming on and making fun of the industry. And that's gone now.
Mm-hmm. It's an organizing principle in a certain way. It's very much a thankless job because everybody focuses on, was the host terrible, was the host great, and nowhere in between.
Yeah.
But like you said, it's somebody who just, you know, you had that Jimmy Kimmel moment when you had Moonlight and La La Land and you had the whole mix up there. If Jimmy Kimmel wasn't there, that would have been
chaos.
Even more of a horror show than it was.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I don't know. I'll miss the host, but it'll also be fine.
Well, if they're able to do things to kind of highlight the different programs or have sort of what feels like multiple hosts where you've got people doing expanded kind of presentation roles and things like that. I love the host situation, but really I love the people that have been the hosts, because it's always such a glaring thing when you get somebody that's not a good fit for it and everyone's like, oh, this is terrible, or, you know, so you have the ability with that one individual personality, you can't be Billy Crystal every year, right. That can kind of almost ruin things. So maybe it's a little safer too, right, where you're not banking on that one personality to kind of carry or not carry it. You can kind of diversify it and highlight a bunch of people.
Yeah, I think there's definitely advantages to it. The one other disadvantage is you'll always have some presenter or group of presenters over the course of the night that are so good that everybody socially goes online on Twitter and says, why weren't they hosting?
Right.
Why didn't they host this evening? And there's always a good reason, whether it's money or scheduling or something like that. But it's something that doesn't necessarily hurt the show, it seems like, if it's not there. But it does feel like there's a hole at the same time, something that should have been there.
We're talking to Alexander Zalbin, the managing editor of Decider.com, a great website if you like television. Stick around, more ahead. It's Bill and Dane in for Wendy on WGN. It's Bill F. and it's Dane Neal. Dane is sitting in for Wendy. She will return on Monday. We're talking about television. Alex, of course, the managing editor of Decider.com. Alex, I may have spoken too soon about the CBS problem being resolved. There's a couple of texts. One says this. Hey, guys, this call is for the Champaign-Urbana area. It still isn't on here. It hasn't been on since July the 8th. I thought that they took care of the problem nationwide, but apparently there's pockets that didn't fit into this. Alex, do you know anything about that?
No, I don't. I'll definitely look into it, but I was also, I thought they had ended everything nationwide as well, so I'm not quite sure what's going
more
on.
More phone
there.
Calls Maybe for you this some. Morning.
Yep, you gotta make
more
another
phone
call.
Calls for you. Sorry about that.
Sorry, it's all right. I'll hop on the phone.
All right, thank you. We appreciate that. Some Game of Thrones news, sort of. It's the people who ran Game of Thrones. They've signed a deal. What's going on there?
Yeah, this is David Benioff and D.B. Weiss, who are the showrunners of Game of Thrones. There's been a bidding war, basically, to see what their next move is going to be. One of the next things they're going to be doing is taking over a Star Wars movie trilogy. They're writing that right now. But from the TV perspective, they finally closed a deal. It's a $200 million deal to make them exclusively creating TV shows for Netflix. Apparently, HBO was in the mix there for a little while, as well as some other outlets, but ultimately Netflix won out. It's super fascinating, I think, for fans of Game of Thrones, particularly anybody who is mixed about the final season, because they were very heavily behind that. But at the same time, they're going to be creating these shows. They're joining Ryan Murphy and Shonda Rhimes and other big name showrunners over there. So Netflix is really gathering the wagon, so to speak, when it comes to talent.
The people that put together that O.J. Simpson miniseries a couple of seasons ago just announced their newest product. It's a similar miniseries about Monica Lewinsky. We heard a little bit about this yesterday. Do you know anything more than was disclosed yesterday?
Yeah, this is, I believe the actual title is Impeachment, American Crime Story. So this is the next iteration of the American Crime Story saga. They're all anthologies, so they all focus on different things, but they use some similar actresses and actors throughout, produced by Ryan Murphy. Sarah Paulson, I believe, is going to be in it. I'm forgetting who else is in the rest of the cast. But the big thing about it is it's going to be released close to the 2010 election, and Monica Lewinsky is one of the producers.
Wow.
So, yeah, it should be very interesting to watch. I'll mention both that and the Gianni Versace season of American Crime Story, where a tremendous television, really responsible, really well done, really powerful. So whatever you might think about it, and certainly it's going to be a hot button topic, it also should be very, very good.
The only casting I remember from yesterday's announcement was that Beanie Feldstein, the sister of Jonah Hill, and a fine actress in her own right, she's going to play Monica Lewinsky. You just mentioned Sarah Paulson. She could potentially play Hillary Clinton, couldn't she? Or is that not their plan?
Just look this up while we were chatting. Sarah Paulson is playing Linda Tripp, which is pretty perfect. Annalee Ashford is the third person they mentioned who's playing Paula Jones. But there's no casting otherwise. That said, Ryan Murphy kind of goes for his own stable of actors pretty often, so expect some familiar big names as they get closer.
We were trying to figure out yesterday who would be the best person to play Bill Clinton, and Hillary Clinton to some extent, but especially Bill Clinton. That's a tough one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know. I'm kind of terrible at the casting game, necessarily.
Yeah.
I think if you get Kate McKinnon as Hillary Clinton, though, that would be kind of amazing just to see her do a little bit of drama there.
Yep.
But Bill, I'm not quite sure.
That's a tough call. Very, very tough. George Takei of Star Trek fame coming back to TV in what way, shape, and form?
This is going to be Monday night on AMC at 9 p.m. It's an anthology horror show. This installment is called The Terror Infamy, and George Takei stars in it. It takes place in a Japanese internment camp during World War II, mixes in some horror and some monsters and some ghosts. Pretty much everybody missed the first installment of The Terror when it aired on AMC, which was focused more on a bunch of seamen trapped up in the Arctic and hunted by a monster there. But it's very well done. It's very emotionally charged. It's very well acted. And Takei was actually in an internment camp as a child, so they worked very heavily with him to make sure that it was authentic and accurate. So it should be a very interesting watch.
All right, I've seen promos for it several times. It looks great. As you mentioned, most people weren't aware of the first season. Is it one of those things where you needed to see the first season for any of this to make sense, or does it start with a fresh storyline?
No, The Terror Infamy, completely fresh storyline, no connection. It's not even like American Horror Story where there's like little Easter eggs throughout. It's very much its own thing.
Well, it's good to know, too, that there isn't some sort of recurring monster that has moved from the
from the
Arctic and now into the internment.
Take solace in knowing that. several people checking in by way of text, Alex, telling us where they have CBS and where it's not coming in. Several areas, a lot of Northwest Indiana, it's still not in place. But more texts calling in to say thank you to you, Alex Zelbin, for fixing the problem here in Chicagoland. You're something of a hero.
Oh, no.
You've become a local hero.
I may not have been totally me. Just,
but you had a part. You had a hand in it.
He's a humble. It's a team effort. Humble. You know.
Yep.
I'd say like 75% of it was me. But all right.
That's fair. A couple shows also returning this week. One of them is Glow. That's the Allison Brie show about roller skating, right? Roller derby.
Wrestling. That is back on Netflix.
Wait,
today,
so wrestling and roller derby are two different things? Are you telling me those are separate?
I think they're great combined, Bill. I think so. This is from a think tank perspective. Maybe you go there, but isn't it the gorgeous ladies of wrestling? Isn't that what GLOW stands for?
Yes.
Okay.
All right. Yeah, it is. This is the third season. For the third season, the cast of GLOW has moved to Vegas. They have a residency there. It's set back in the 80s. This show, I cannot say enough good things about it. Gina Davis is actually joining the cast for a surprising and amazing role for this third season as well. But it's emotional. It's funny. The episodes are all about a half an hour long, so it's very easily bingeable. And from a fan perspective, I would say Netflix has a habit of running shows for three seasons and then canceling them. When you get to the end of the third season, you'll see why you really need a fourth season. Mm. So I do hope everybody binges it, checks it out this weekend as if it was an opening weekend. It is very much well worth your time.
Is Marc Maron still involved?
He is. He has a great role in this season as well. He's the director of the show, but now that they're doing the same show every single day, he has nothing to do. So there's a very funny bit about him just like wandering around casinos for most of the season.
Oh, good.
Kind of doing his
thing.
That
sounds great.
Fantastic.
And then let me ask you about one more. I only saw a little bit of this. I saw the first episode and I thought it was really interesting, but for some reason I didn't figure out to keep watching it. Succession over on HBO season 2 starting Sunday night. What can you tell us about that?
Yeah, so this is picking up right after the first season. I think a lot of people completely missed the first season, but it's had a slow burn like a lot of HBO shows. It's basically about a bunch of kids vying to take over their father's media empire, played by Brian Cox. Somebody here, I believe it was one of our writers, Megan O'Keefe, described it as it's like Game of Thrones if it was just Lannisters, and that was it.
Yeah.
So it's caustic, it's funny, it's dramatic. Definitely this is one, unlike The Terror, where you have to go back and watch the entire first season because it's so dense. But do jump in. It's as good in the second season as the first.
That is Alex Zalbin. He's become something of a local hero here in Chicago for solving the CBS AT&T crisis. We appreciate you doing that, Alex. So nice of you. Have a great weekend, and we'll talk to you a week from today.
All right. Thanks so much.
That's Alex Zalbin.